takes me about 15 seconds. Okay, that's recording. Record to cloud. Okay, and that's recording and that's recording.
There.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Roger Paul, and tonight we're going to continue our study on paper 134. We're on page 1490.7 of the original book, or 134.64 in the rest of the books. So, hi, Rodney.
Hi,
So
Alex.
let's get
Hey.
started here. I'll start out reading and then Diane can take the next one. Another, we're going to go through these first few slides pretty fast because we talked about most of this last time. So, another war will teach the so-called sovereign nations. One thing that you're going to see throughout these next few slides, the midwayers that helped write this were not happy about the governments, patriotic governments, considering themselves sovereign. And that's what this is about. The so-called sovereign nations to force some sort of federation, but thus creating the machinery for preventing small wars. Wars between lesser nations, but global wars will go on until the government of mankind is created. Global sovereignty will prevent global wars, nothing else can. So they believe that we need to come up with a global government to control everything and stop all the wars. Okay, take the next one.
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to make a comment here. At the current stage of the evolution of man, with our total lack of compassion for one another.
Not lack of moral values is what it is, right? Oh,
Hey, yeah,
sorry.
correct. Having a one-world nation is—I don't know the right word to say—but it's not good. Okay. But
Not in our current
because
state, it's not. No, it's
no,
not.
because all you
Yep.
would have is states warring against states.
Yeah.
That's all you would do. It'd be instead of being a war, it would be a civil insurrection.
Yeah, we've not evolved enough, have we? That's
It's
just
just
all there is to it. Okay, Diane, will you take the next
okay.
one?
The 48 American and free states live
Live together
together
in
in peace.
peace.
There
There
are
are among
among the
the citizens
citizens of
of these
these
48
48 states
states
all
all of
of
the
the
various
various nationalities
nationalities
and
and
races
races
that
that
live
live
in
in
the
the
ever-warring
ever-warring
nation
nation
of
of Europe.
Europe.
These
These
Americans
Americans
represent
represent
almost
almost
all
all
the
the
religions
religions
and
and
religious
religious
sects
sects
and
and
cults
cults
of
of
the
the
whole
whole
wide
wide
world.
world.
And
And
yet
yet
here
here
in
in
North
North
America,
America,
they
they
live
live
together
together
in
in peace.
peace.
And
And
all
all
this
this
is
is
made
made
possible
possible
because
because
these
these 48
48 states
states have
have
surrendered
surrendered
their
their sovereignty
sovereignty
and
and
have
have abandoned
abandoned all
all notions
notions
of
of
the
the
supposed
supposed rights
rights
of
of
self-determination.
self-determination. And that's true. And back when this was written back in 34, there were only 48 states. But now there's more, right? Okay, the other thing is this. We had to go through a civil war to get to that point. Remember?
We did. It was
You
awful.
know, it was a horrible, horrible thing, and we never wanted to see it again. So that's probably what will have to happen for all the world to come to that place. All right. Gary, will you take the next one, please?
You got me, didn't
Yeah.
you? It is not a question of armaments or disarmament. Neither does the question of conscription or voluntary military service enter into these problems of maintaining worldwide peace. If you take every form of modern mechanical armaments and all types of explosives away from strong nations, they will fight with fists, stones, and clubs as long as they cling to their delusion of the divine right of national sovereignty.
And that's especially true of religions, is it not? Every religion thinks they
Correct.
are the only one. All right, Rodney, would you take the next one?
War is not man's great and terrible disease. War is a symptom, a result. The real disease is the virus of national sovereignty.
That's an interesting concept,
Really?
isn't it?
Yeah.
Rodney, would you take the next one too?
Of
Because
course.
that's really short.
Your imaginations have not possessed real sovereignty. They never have had a sovereignty which could protect them from the ravages and devastations of world wars. In the creation of the global government of mankind, the nations are not giving up sovereignty so much as they are actually creating a real, bona fide, and lasting world sovereignty, which will henceforth be fully able to protect them from all war. Local affairs will be handled by local governments, national affairs by national governments. International affairs will be administered by global government.
Now, you got to remember when they write this, they're writing it from the viewpoints of billions of worlds in which they see where government works. Okay.
Right.
And that is what they're trying to relay to us, that other worlds are run this way. They have a world sovereignty or a world government. But the other thing is, they're not in quarantine like we are. They have a recognized spiritual government at the head. And we don't have that. We don't recognize our spiritual government because we have no physical representation of that physical government that we can see. Okay? That's part of the problem. All right, Pam, would you take the next one?
World peace cannot be maintained by treaties, diplomacy, foreign policies, alliances, balances of power, or any other type of makeshift juggling with the sovereignties of nationalism. World law must come into being and must be enforced by world government, the sovereignty of all mankind.
And you'll notice that they make no bones about any of this, do they? They say this is the way it has to be run. The individual will enjoy far more liberty under world government. Today, the citizens of the great powers are taxed, regulated, and controlled almost oppressively. And much of this present interference with individual liberties will vanish when the national governments are willing to trustee their sovereignty as regard to international affairs into the hands of a global government, so we won't get taxed to death. All
I'm
right.
going to tell you, I'm going to interject. As long as there's in economic inequality, and I'm not talking about universal socialism, I'm saying where, say, the tribal Africans are a moron playing with the American status and the European status and the Russian status on an economic, on a having heat, electricity, air conditioning, etc., all the amenities that the rest of the world has, we can't have this.
That's true, but Gary, and the point you make is very, very good because right now, this minute in this country, we have technology which the gov our government itself will not put out that will clothe, give electricity, take care of the entire world. There is no excuse on this planet that people cannot eat and do not have electricity and do not have clean water. None whatsoever, because we
Breathe.
already have the technology that we've reversed engineered from other alien societies that will power the entire world, but our own federal government won't release it to the public. Okay? And I don't like to take that stance, but it's just the truth. You can go out to YouTube and look it up. Dr. Greer just did a video on how they've discovered four new power sources in the United States that could take care of all the global problems. But the government, every time somebody comes up with something, because of the patent office, they won't let them put it out there, And until they straighten that out and get money out of politics, it'll always be this way. right? Because they make money, so much money on oil and gas and everything else. Okay, I'm off my soapbox now. Okay, let's go on. Who's up again? I think I am, right?
Under global government, the national groups will be afforded a real opportunity to realize and enjoy the personal liberties of genuine democracy. The fallacy of self-determination will be ended. With global regulations of money and trade will come the new era of worldwide peace. Soon may a global language evolve, and there will be at least some hope of sometime having a global religion or religions with a global viewpoint.
Be a long time.
Be a long time off yet, won't it? The religions are talking about with a global viewpoint, it would be a religion that accepts all religions, not just some. All right. Gary, would you take this real short one?
Yeah, I need to break,
Yeah.
Collective security will never afford peace until the collectivity includes all mankind. It's
So everyone will have to be involved in it, right? Rodney, would you take the next one?
The political sovereignty of representative mankind, government, will bring lasting peace on earth, and the spiritual brotherhood of man will forever ensure goodwill among all men. And there is no other way whereby peace on earth and goodwill among men can be realized.
So they're saying this is the only way this is going to ever come about, right? Pam, would you take the next one?
After the death of
Samboyton.
Samboynton,
Yeah.
his sons encountered great difficulties in maintaining a peaceful faculty. The repercussions of Jesus' teachings would have been much greater if the later Christian teachers would, who joined the Urmia faculty, had exhibited more wisdom and exercised more tolerance.
So the Christian teachers they sent in from the Philadelphia church were more like Paul. They wouldn't give in and accept other religions. So they literally destroyed it. All right. Samboyton's eldest son had appealed to Abner in Philadelphia for help, but Abner's choice of teachers was most unfortunate in that they turned out to be unyielding and uncompromising. That's what happened. These teachers sought to make their religion dominant over the other beliefs. They never suspected that the oft referred to lectures of the caravan conductor had been delivered by Jesus himself. They had taken a different look at it. They had. Diane?
They may have prosecuted him.
It's true.
As confusion increased in the faculty, the three brothers withdrew their financial support, and after 5 years, the school closed. Later, it was reopened as a
Rick.
temple, and eventually burned down in connection with one of their
Yes.
orgasic, what does that mean?
That's
Celebrations.
that means that they were having
orgy.
orgies.
Oh, that's disgusting.
In connection with the church, the Methodist church there.
All right.
So it failed. Sex and religion never mixes, any way you look at it. I don't care what anybody tells you. Gary, would you take the next one?
When Jesus returned from the journey,
Would you read the title first, please?
excuse me, number seven. The first 30, the 31st year, excuse me. When Jesus returned from the journey to the Caspian Sea, he knew that his world travels were about finished. He made only one more trip outside of Palestine, and that was into Syria. After a brief visit to Capernaum, I think I said that right.
Yeah, you did.
He went to Nazareth, stopping over a few days to visit. In the middle of April, he left Nazareth for Tyre. From there, he journeyed on north, tarrying for a few days at Sidon, but his destination was Antioch.
He did that by himself.
Yeah, he was by himself during all these, this last little year and a half, 2 years of him moving around. Rodney, would you take this one?
Yes. I think it said AD 25.
AD 25.
Okay.
Yeah, that
That's
would have
the
met
year.
Jesus right at 31, I believe it
Yeah.
is.
Something
Okay.
like that.
That's what the sex section says, year 31.
Yeah.
Okay, this year, this is the year of Jesus's solitary wanderings through Palestine and Syria. Throughout this year of travel, he was known by various names in different parts of the country: the carpenter of Nazareth, the boat builder of Capernaum, the scribe of Damascus, and the teacher of Alexandria.
And all these were Jesus, right? He went by all these different names. Pam, would you take the next one, please?
At Antioch, the Son of Man lived for over 2 months, working, observing, studying, visiting, ministering, and all the while learning how man lives, how he thinks, feels, and reacts to the environment of human existence. For 3 weeks of this period, he worked as a tent maker. He remained longer in Antioch than in any other place he visited on this trip. 10 years later, when the Apostle Paul was preaching in Antioch, he heard his followers speak of the doctrines of the Damascus scribe. He little knew that his pupils had heard the voice and listened to the teachings of the master himself.
So Paul didn't even recognize his teachings from past, did he? Okay, from the Antioch Jesus, excuse me. From Antioch, Jesus journeyed south along the coast of Caesarea, where he tarried a few weeks, continuing down the coast to Joppa. From Joppa, he traveled inland to Idumea, Ashdod, and Gaza. From Gaza, he took the inland trail to Beersheba, where he remained for a week. And there's a map of all these put together years ago. All right.
Jesus then started on his final tour as a private individual through the heart of Palestine, going from Beersheba in the south to Dan in the north. On this journey northward, he stopped at Hebron, Bethlehem, where he saw his birthplace, Jerusalem. He did not visit the Bethany. He did not visit Bethany. Beeroth, Lebanon, Sychar, okay, keep on going. Samaria, Geba, and Ganum, Endor, Medan, passing through Magdala and Capernaum. He journeyed on north and passing east of the waters of Merom. He went by Caratha to Dan or Kasira, Philippi. So,
Glad you had
oh,
that.
well, I didn't do that
Caesarea Philippi. Okay,
thank
well.
you.
And but we all appreciate we didn't have to read
Right, Gary, would you take the next one? Let's go back and read that last one again, Gary.
I'm sorry, I've got white vision problems.
Okay.
The indwelling thought adjuster now led Jesus to forsake the dwelling places of man and betake himself up to Mount Hermon,
Herman. Yep.
that he might finish his work of mastering his human mind and complete the task of effecting his full consecration of the remainder of his life work on earth.
Okay, we're going to get to Mount Hermon in a minute. That's his most probably the most important period during his this time of life. All right, Rodney, would you take the next one?
Yes. This was one of those unusual and extraordinary epics in the master's earth life on your ranch. Another and very similar one was the experience he passed through when alone in the hills near Pella, just subsequent to his baptism. This period of isolation on Mount Hermon marked the termination of his purely human career, that is, the technical termination of the mortal bestowal. While the latter or later isolation marked the beginning of the more divine phase of the bestowal. And Jesus lived alone with God for 6 weeks on the slopes of Mount Hermon.
Notice it says here that this really terminated his mortal bestowal, this period on Mount Hermon. So he settled everything that he needed to do in his bestowal, with the exception of death, right? So that's why they call this period after his baptism his more divine. You notice that period of time? Because it was a period of time he chose to stick around for to teach people. Basically, it was his divine revelation to man. Okay.
So he had become a perfected human.
He had become a perfected unit human. Normally, he had reached the point that any other human would fuse with their adjuster and be taken from the planet, right?
Correct.
But he chose to stay as a divine being. The only thing that he hadn't done is died an earth life, right? All other the requirements of the bestowal were finished. Pim, would you take the next one?
After spending some time in the
Read the
vicinity,
title for me, Pim.
oh, the
Because people
sojourn
listen,
on Mount
they can't
Hermon.
see it. Okay.
After spending some time in the vicinity of Caesarea Philippi, Jesus made ready his supplies and, securing a beast of burden and a lad named Tiglath, he proceeded along the Damascus road to a village sometime known as Beit Jen, in the foothills of Mount Hermon. Here, near the middle of August AD 25, he established his headquarters, and leaving his supplies in the custody of Tiglath, he ascended the lonely slopes of the mountain. Tiglath accompanied Jesus his first day up the mountain to a designated point about 6,000 feet above sea level, where they built a stone container in which Tiglath was to deposit food twice a week.
Okay, so during this 6 week period, Jesus didn't starve himself. And here's a picture of this area and where he went during that period of time. Okay, and this is Mount Hermon right here. Okay, see this little red dot up here? All right, and there's another one. Okay, so during this 6 week period of time, I'm going to make it clear he didn't fast for 30 days, he didn't starve himself, anything like that. So all this stuff that happened wasn't due to him being half starved and seeing things. Okay, they've made that clear. All right, so the first day after he left Tiglath, Jesus had ascended the mountain only a short way when he paused to pray. Among other things, he asked his father to send back the guardian seraphim to be with Tiglath. He requested that he be permitted to go up to his last struggle with the realities of mortal existence alone, and his request was granted. He went into great tests with only his indwelling adjuster to guide and sustain him.
So,
Yes.
Roger, I've got a question
Yeah.
about the last. So, apparently, let's see. I thought we all had guardian angels,
We do.
but that was after Pentecost, because he asked for a guardian angel to be with Tiglath.
Yeah, but no, this was not after Pentecost.
No, I meant we all got guardian angels.
Oh, after Pentecost. Assigned to, right. Well, we all had them before Pentecost, but we were usually in groups, group seraphim, right? So they might have, 1,000 people under two seraphim, right?
So he asked for a special guardian angel.
Yeah, he asked for the, you know, he asked for the his guardian seraphim, which would have been a pair, okay? He asked for them to go back and be with Tiglath because he wanted to face Satan and Caligastro, Satan being the representative of Lucifer alone. So he wanted to be a human being, the son of man, when he faced both Lucifer or Satan and Caligastia, so that he could demonstrate to the universe that as human beings, we have the power over anything that might attach itself and try to attack us.
So it was a
Okay.
special request because Jesus didn't want to be interrupted.
That's right. He didn't want his seraphim helping out. He didn't want his seraphim to influence him in any way. I'm sure he had two seraphim, a cherubim, and a cherubim with him all the time, but they were asked to stay back during this period of time. Now, it's interesting that normally we know that the seraphim records everything, right, for us. So that job would had to been taken over by midwayers, okay, during this period of time. Why was that? Because if his seraphim were no longer with him, some being had to record everything that went on, and that would fall in the purview of primary or secondary midwayers, which Jesus could not see, right? Because they're outside the sight realm. He would not be able to see Satan or Caligasta either, except for the fact he asked the Father to make them visible to him so that he could encounter them. Okay, but normally he wouldn't be able to see them either because he was human. Okay, all right.
And that's why we can't see them.
That's why we can't see them. That's right. When we take the next one down.
Jesus ate frugally while on the mountain. He abstained from all food only a day or two at a time. The superhuman beings who confronted him on this mountain and with whom he wrestled in spirit and whom he defeated in power were real. They were his arch enemies in the system of Satania. They were not fantasias of the imagination evolved out of the intellectual vagaries of a weakened and starving mortal who could not distinguish reality from the visions of a disordered mind.
Okay, the reason they're making this clear is there's been people down through time who tried to say that Jesus was half starved to death and delusional and all these things during this encounter on Mount Hermon. Of course, they account it to him going off by himself after the baptism. In reality, this happened before. But people were trying to convince everybody that he was mentally reduced because of this starvation, and that is not the case at all. Yeah,
Roger,
Rodney.
interesting that they say superhuman beings. Maybe they meant supernatural beings.
Well, you could call them that too, Rodney, but really, in essence, they are superhuman because they're not of the human norm, right?
That's what I mean.
Yeah, they are really supernatural or superhuman. Either one could be used in this case.
They're not.
Probably they use superhuman, trying to make us understand more that they're above just being human. Yeah, Gary.
They weren't ascending mortals, so they wouldn't be human.
They wouldn't be human. That's right. They wouldn't be under any shape, form, or fashion. Even Caligasta, who was assigned to the planet as the planetary prince, was not a human, right?
Correct.
He was a superhuman. He was a spiritual that being. He was a Lanadondex son, so he was not a normal being. All right. Gary, would you take the next one?
Yeah, Jesus spent the last 3 weeks of August and the first 3 weeks of September on Mount Hermon. During these weeks, he's finished the mortal task of achieving the circle of mind understanding and personality control. Throughout this period of communion with his Heavenly Father, the indwelling adjuster also completed the assigned services. The mortal goal of his earth creature was there attained.
Okay, so he
There.
had finished everything that was required of him on the bestowal.
Yes.
That therefore made the bestowal finished in essence. All he had to do was die at this point.
We got one more sentence, young man.
Oh,
Yeah.
sorry. Let me
That's
do that.
okay.
All
Yeah,
right, go ahead.
people make mistakes.
Who, me?
Only the final phase of mind and adjust. Let me read that over. Only the final phase of mind and adjuster atonement remain to be consummated.
Okay, and that's the phase in which most people would fuse, if that's the case, right? All right. Rodney.
After more than 5 weeks of unbroken communion with his paradise father, Jesus became absolutely assured of his nature and of the certainty of his triumph over the material levels of time, space, personality, manifestation. He fully believed in and did not hesitate to assert the ascendancy of his divine nature over his human nature.
This is the point in which Jesus's self-awareness of him being who he was before he came to earth was truly finished, right? In other words, his whole life he had self-limited his knowledge of his pre-existence, okay? And at this point, the full knowledge of his pre-existence come into full fruition. So he was totally aware of whom he was by this point before he came to the planet. So, in essence, his human mind and his divine mind came to a unity of thought, in essence. Okay, so he literally knew who he was, where he was, and his physical human mind knew who and where he came from too. So, which is very important because from this point on, it started his divine bestowal part of his career.
I have a question.
Yeah.
When we make our transition,
Go ahead. Yeah.
When
When
we
we
make
make
our
our transition,
transition,
do
do
we
we have
have
that
that
experience
experience also
also where
where we
we realize
when we get to the mansion
when
wall?
we get into the mansion
We
wall?
have a epiphany of our presence of the thought adjuster and us being one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an immediate, pretty
It's
much.
a pretty much immediate. We hadn't fused yet, but we have the awareness of it. Now, unmute, let me say something about that too. This is a great question that Diane has asked because we think when we get to the mansion worlds, we're just going to have memories of everything that ever happened to us before, right? That's not the case. We will only have memories of things that are spiritually relevant to our future career. Okay? So that's why they say in the book, anything that happens to you that had a spiritual significance will be fresh in your mind as a memory. Okay? But those things which are spiritually non focused in your mind or of no consequences to your mind will be totally gone. That's scaffolding. It will fall away. So you won't remember every single thing that ever happened to you.
So it'll be
Oh, thank
distracting.
goodness. Yeah, it would be too distracting. And that's why, people often ask, well, I remember my pets and that sort of thing. Only if your pets had a spiritual connection in your life. Okay? Because if they did not, then number one, they would be extra weight on your mental capabilities of growing that is not necessary. And those people in your life and which had no spiritual association with your life, you will not remember them either. Okay? This is one of the reasons why there's no tears in heaven. You don't have any sorrow about things like that or people that didn't make it because they had no spiritual significance to you, and they will have no spiritual significance to you into the future. So you won't be burdened with any of those memories anymore. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. And that's as easy as I can explain it. And it's important that we realize that, because we think we're going to wake up and we're going to remember everything, and that's not going to be the case. Only those things which are spiritually significant, which the thought adjuster helped you remember in your mind, will be there.
I'm
Now,
going to have a pretty well vacant mind.
You might, but think
you see,
of it.
There, my head will be much smaller.
Well, you also will understand, if that is the case, you'll understand why so many people will wake up in the first mansion world on a very, very low level of spiritual development. So you understand why these people have to be put in remedial classes, because they have nothing to build on. Right?
Unfortunately, I know a lot of those people.
Yeah, I do too. I've known a lot of them through life. And the thing is this, it's the mercy and wisdom of God the Father that allows these people to make it to the first mansion world to rebuild a spiritual life. And it's a pity they didn't take time during their normal life to learn the wisdom lessons and the spiritual lessons of this life. And this is why I stay here every Tuesday and Thursday beating this stuff into people's heads, right? Because it's the most important thing in their lives. It's the most important thing in my life. It's the most important thing in everyone's life. And that's hard to realize. All right, let's go on. Who's up?
I think
you
I
are.
am.
You are? Okay, ma'am. Go ahead.
Near the end of the mountain sojourn, Jesus asked his father if he might be permitted to hold conference with his Satania enemies as the Son of Man, as Joshua ben Joseph. The request was granted during the last week on Mount Hermon. The great temptation, the universe trial, occurred. Satan, representing Lucifer, and the rebellious planetary prince Caligastia, were present with Jesus and were made fully visible to him. And this temptation, this final trial of human loyalty in the face of the misrepresentations of rebel personalities, had not to do with food, temple pinnacles, or presumptuous acts. It had not to do with the kingdoms of this world, but with the sovereignty of a mighty and glorious universe. The symbolism of our records was intended for the backward ages of the world's childlike thought, and subsequent generations should understand what a great struggle the Son of Man passed through that eventful day on Mount Hermon.
Okay, let me give y'all an association for this. When Lucifer was going back and forth to the system capital, Satania, okay, when he was going back and forth trying to convince these large groups of people to follow him into rebellion, is the same sort of arguments Jesus had to deal with Caligastia and Satan. Okay, so he experienced the same thing that those celestial beings were trying to be convinced that why they should rebel. It's the same arguments that Satan and Caligastia was trying to convince Jesus that he should follow them instead of following the God the Father.
Is this the time that which Jesus basically neutered their power on earth?
Yes. Because this literally was the trial of Caligasta, Lucifer, and Satan before the system sovereign, who was whom? Jesus. Okay? So you could say this is the trial of Satan and Caligasta and Lucifer being represented by Satan. So this is the trial of our local universe. And when it was all over, who remained dominant?
Michael.
Jesus did, right? He retained his sovereignty. So that's why this little thing going on Mount Hermon was so important. And that's why all the universe witnessed then. I'm sure this was broadcast to every single planet at the same time. You know what I'm saying? All right. Okay, I think I'm up again. To many proposals and counterproposals of the emissaries of Lucifer, Jesus only made reply, "May the will of my paradise father prevail, and you, my rebellious son, may the ancients of days judge you divinely. I am your creator father. I can hardly judge you justly, and my mercy you have already spurned. I commit you to the adjudication of the judges of a greater universe." So he basically saying, "I'm washing my hands of you. Let the ancients of days judge you as they fit, see fit." Right? Pretty important.
Yeah.
Okay. Diane.
To all the Lucifer suggested compromises and makeshifts, to all such special proposals about the incarnation bestowal, Jesus only made reply, "The will of my Father in paradise be done." And when the trying ordeal was finished, the detached guardian seraphim returned to Jesus's side and minister to him.
So after it was all over, the seraphim returned to Jesus to minister to Jesus. All right. Woo.
Yes.
It's a real short one.
Must be Gary's.
Must be Gary's. I think he's up too.
I see my name in the upper left corner there.
Yeah.
Ready?
Ready.
On an afternoon in late summer, amid the trees and in the silence of nature, Michael of Nebanon won the unquestionable sovereignty of his universe. On that day, he completed the task set for the Creator's sons to live to the full the incarnated life of the likeness of mortal flesh on the evolutionary worlds of time and space. The universe announcement of this momentous achievement was not made until the day of his baptism, months afterwards. But it all really took place that day on the mountain. And when Jesus came down from his sojourning on Mount Hermon, the Lucifer Rebellion in Satania and the Caligascan secession on Urantia were virtually settled. Jesus had paid the last price required of him to attain the sovereignty of his universe, which in itself regulates the status of all rebels and determines that all such future upheavals, parentheses, if they ever occur, on parentheses, may be dealt with somewhat summarily and effectively. Accordingly, it may be seen that the so-called, quote, great temptation, unquote, of Jesus took place sometime before his baptism and not just after that event.
So this settled everything in the universe of Nebadon, didn't it? All right.
I think in the scriptures or the Bible, they must have messed it up.
Oh yeah, the time-wise, because it was recorded by men, they didn't really understand what happened on Mount Hermon. I don't think anybody in that age did, because it says in the book they had childlike minds and they didn't have the capability of understanding the import of what had happened, right? And Jesus probably did not relate most of this to anybody except the apostles, and they didn't understand either, really. Okay.
He had a job because basically what you're saying, he was, the apostles were children.
Yeah, in their minds.
Yeah.
And honestly, Gary, what it boils down to is this: a good percentage of the population on this planet are still in that same spot, are they not?
A very, very high percentage.
Yeah.
I just had an 83-year-old man tell me 2 days ago that he didn't want to learn anything. He had learned all he needed to know.
What?
Yep.
Well, the standard Christian response is, I've been saved by Jesus, so I don't need to know anything else. That's just totally ignorance.
Well, just recently you got a notice that guy told you that he was a Christian.
Yeah, I got a post from one of my videos that was a Christian says, why don't you just teach the Bible? Why are you teaching this? So,
Obviously, they haven't listened very much.
no, obviously. All right, Gary, Rodney, would you take the next one?
At the end of this sojourn on the mountain, as Jesus was making his descent, he met Tiglath coming up to the rendezvous with food. Turning him back, he said only, the period of rest is over. I must return to my father's business. He was a silent and much changed man as they journeyed back to Dan, where he took leave of the lad, giving him the donkey. He then proceeded south by the same way that he had come to Capernaum.
So he went back to doing what he was doing the firm and getting ready to wait for his time, right? Pam, would you take the next one?
Yes, the time of waiting. It was now near the end of the summer, about the time of the Day of Atonement and the Feast of Tabernacles. Jesus had a family meeting in Capernaum over the Sabbath, and the next day started for Jerusalem with John, the son of Zebedee, going to the east of the lake and by Gerasa, and on down the Jordan Valley. While he visited some with his companion on the way, John noted a great change in Jesus.
So after this visit on Mount Hermon, and this is his pathway during that period of time, you can read that at your leisure. He noticed that John noticed Jesus had changed. All right.
Where did he meet John of Zabaton? I mean, when did
John, the son of Zebedee, was the son of the father boat builder that Jesus worked with, and he worked with all three of the Zebedee boys building boats there in Capernaum.
So he was not, I'm, was John of Zebedee, was he a, became an apostle?
Later
Yes.
on,
Okay. Okay. That may be why my childlike mind is confused.
That's all right, because John Zebedee, it ended up being the one that wrote the book of Revelation, remember? John the Revelator, that was John Zebedee. And John Zebedee was the one that took care of Jesus's mother till she died. Okay, so John was very faithful and loyal to Jesus, made sure that Jesus's mother was taken care of. All right. Okay, now James came down and worked with him in the boat building stuff too, his brother, right? James, Jesus's brother. But James was not chosen as an apostle because Jesus purposely did not want to include any of his family members in the apostles, right? Hurt James' feeling for a long time, but after Jesus has died, James came a very important member of the church, right? So interesting how things work out. Okay, I think I'm up again. Jesus and John stopped overnight at Bethany with Lazarus and his sisters, going early the next morning to Jerusalem. They spent almost 3 weeks in and around the city, at least John did. Many days John went into Jerusalem alone while Jesus walked about over the nearby hills and engaged in many seasons of spiritual communion with his Father in heaven. So Jesus was spent lots of time getting ready for his mission coming up, dear.
Both of them were present at the solemn services of the Day of Atonement. John was much impressed by the ceremonies of this day of days in the Jewish religious ritual, but Jesus remained a thoughtful and silent spectator. To the Son of Man, this performance was pitiful and pathetic. He viewed it all as misrepresentative of the character and attributes of his Father in heaven. He looked upon the doings of this day as a travesty upon the facts of divine justice and the truths of infinite mercy. He burned to give vent to the declaration of the real truth about his Father's loving character and merciful conduct in the universe. But his faithful monitor admonished him that his hour had not yet come. But that night, at Bethany, Jesus did drop numerous remarks which greatly disturbed John, and John never fully understood the real significance of what Jesus said in their hearing that evening.
So Jesus felt like the whole thing going on at the temple there was a travesty upon the and a misrepresentation of the attributes of the Father in heaven, didn't he? Especially the sacrificial part of it. All right. Gary, would you take the next one?
Jesus planned to remain throughout the week of the Feast of Tabernacles with John. This feast was the annual holiday of all Palestine. It was the Jewish vacation time. Although Jesus did not participate in the merriment of the occasion, it was evident that he derived pleasure and experienced satisfaction as he beheld the lighthearted and joyous abandon of the youth and the old.
So this is their yearly celebration, right? Okay, so that's what was going on. Rodney, would you take the next one? We're going to be able to finish this one tonight, I think. So.
In the midst of the week of celebration, and ere the festivities were finished, Jesus took leave of John, saying that he desired to retire to the hills where he might the better commune with his paradise Father. John would have gone with him, but Jesus insisted that he stayed through the festivities, saying, "It is not required of you to bear the burden of the Son of Man. Only the watchman must keep vigil while the city sleeps in peace." Jesus did not return to Jerusalem. After almost a week, alone in the hills near Bethany, he departed for Capernaum. On the way home, he spent a day and a night alone on the slopes of Gilboa, near where King Saul had taken his life. And when he arrived at Capernaum, he seemed more cheerful than when he had left John in Jerusalem.
So he commuted with his father and prepared himself for what was to come, didn't he?
Can I ask a
Rodney.
question?
Yeah.
You think Saul made it in heaven because he killed himself?
I do not know that. I often wondered that same question myself, Gary.
Sorry, what was the question?
Whether Saul made it to heaven because he killed himself.
Oh.
Don't know. You know, they say in the book the worst thing you can do is commit suicide. You know, so I do not know. It all depends on your motives during that period of time. I'm not going to take that chance and kill myself to find out. That's for darn
That is
sure.
a selfish act.
It's a selfish act. That's right. All right, let's go on to the next one. Pam, would you take the next one?
The next morning, Jesus went to the chest containing his personal effects, which had remained in Zebedee's workshop, put on his apron, and presented himself for work, saying, "It behooves me to keep busy while I wait for my hour to come. And he worked several months until January of the following year in the boat shop by the side of his brother James. After this period of working with Jesus, no matter what doubts came up to becloud James's understanding of the life work of the Son of Man, he never again really and wholly gave up his faith in the mission of Jesus.
He did get his feelings hurt when he wasn't asked to be an apostle, though, didn't he? For a while. So this was almost a year up after this. During this final period of Jesus' work at the boat shop, he spent most of his time on the interior finishing of some of the larger crafts. He took great pains with all his handiwork and seemed to experience the satisfaction of human achievement when he had completed a memorable piece of work. Though he wasted little time upon trifles, he was particularly a painstaking workman when it came to the essentials of any giving undertaking, so he was proud of his work. Diane.
As time passed, rumors came to Capernaum of one John, who was preaching while baptizing penitents in the Jordan, and John preached, "The kingdom of heaven is at hand. Repent and be baptized." Jesus listened to these reports as John slowly worked his way up the Jordan River, a Jordan Valley, from the ford of the river nearest to Jerusalem. But Jesus worked on making boats until John had journeyed up the river to a point near Pella in the month of January of the next year, AD 26, when he laid down his tools, declaring, "My hour has come," and presently presented himself to John the Baptist for baptism, and
Presently
presently
presented,
presented
presented
himself
himself,
to
John,
John for
for baptism.
baptism. Yes.
That's right. So he kept track of John coming up the river until he was ready. And then, Gary, take the last one.
Roger,
Yeah.
I should explain, just in case someone doesn't understand what a ford is.
Yeah.
It's a way to cross the river,
Yeah.
safely
Yeah.
by foot. So it's
As opposed to a raging river where you drown getting across, right? Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. But a great change had been coming over Jesus. Few of the people who had enjoyed his visits and ministrations as he had gone up and down in the land ever subsequently recognized in the public teacher the same person they had known and loved as a private individual in former years. And there was a reason for this failure of this early beneficiaries to recognize him in his later role of public and authoritative teacher. For long years, this transformation of mind and spirit had been in progress, and it was finished during the eventual sojourn on Mount Hermon.
Okay, so he had prepared himself all the way up to this point of his baptism, right? Let me share the prayer for tonight. I think I'll read the prayer tonight. Prayer of acceptance. I believe that God is my paradise father and that only by faith am I saved. No sacrifice is necessary. By the same faith, I became a child of God and know that all men and women are my brothers and sisters. We know the Son of God, the sovereign of our universe of Nebanon, as Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. By allowing the will of God to become my will, I will someday stand in the presence of the Paradise Father. In the name of Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth, Amen.
Amen.
And that's
Amen.
the end of that paper. Next time we'll go into paper 135, John the Baptist. We'll get a
Yeah.
lot of background on John the Baptist, right? We made it by
Good.
6:59. I can't believe it.
It's great.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks for coming. We love you guys. And we will see everybody on Thursday, and we'll start the paper on John the Baptist as creek don't rise.
Cool.
All right.
Or the river. Thank you all again.
You're welcome. See everybody then.
Love you
Take
guys.
care.
You too.
Too.
All
Love
right,
you.
all.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.